The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Road trips are going to be way more expensive this summer. We now have 9 states where the average is $4.90 a gallon or higher. The problem is that supply just cannot keep up with really strong demand as people travel more. The U.S. is not producing as much as it used to. Neither is OPEC. And so prices have nowhere to go but up. 1 in 4 Americans are actually expecting that economic conditions are going to get worse. There's also that Gallup poll that you mentioned. A staggering 46% of Americans say economic conditions are poor. 46%, just 14% say excellent or good. On the housing front, new numbers out today show that home prices in the United States rose by a record 20.6% year over year in March. That means home prices are rising faster than they did even during the mid-2000s housing bubble.
Hey, Brian, none of those steps really are going to address the skyrocketing costs that people have seen at the gas pump or in line at the food, the grocery store. SPR release didn't work, didn't bring oil or gas prices down, and we've seen a great deal of inflation that's come since then. I think it's great to stay out of the Fed's way, let them do their job, but none of these other things are going to have an immediate impact on inflationary prices.
What is the expectation today as you advise the president, or his expectation about how long prices will be in at these high levels, 40-year levels, how long inflation will be here?
Well, there is uncertainty, and I will leave the predictions to forecast.
Is it a problem? Is it a hardship? Is it a crisis? What is it that people are facing?
It is. We're just in a difficult time.
Do you guys think that any part of inflation this year is because of President Biden's spending plans, or is it all Putin's fault?
Well, what I can say is we are, and Brian just spoke to this, we are at a historic place when it comes to the economy, when it comes to unemployment being at the lowest that we have seen in some time, when it comes to the president creating more jobs in his first term, his first year, than any other president, more than 8.5 million jobs. Now we're going to a place where we're going into transition, where we're going to see an economy that's more stable, that's more steady.
There you go. The economy going from, as we head into these busy travel months of the summer, it's going from bad to worse, and no end in sight, really. She's trying to spin it positively for Joe Biden, but for the most part, Joe Biden's no longer off limits. A lot of the talking heads are pinning the blame on the fake president's policies, which, as we know, are in fact Barack Obama's policies, as he continues with his third term as president of the United States. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining our growing audience. You can get to the live audio stream of this show through CRN Digital Talk Radio, Channel 3 on that platform. But to get to the live video stream, you have to go to our very own website. You can see the address there at the bottom of the screen. That would be thetrumpet.com. Just go to thetrumpet.com/live. Takes you right to the live stream page. Also, the podcast that we post after the fact, a couple hours or so after the show ends. And you should know, too, that at the front page of the Trumpet website, that's just thetrumpet.com, there's a box over on the right-hand side for the Trumpet Daily program. So you can get the latest 3 or 4 programs there in that box for the TD. And catch up on your viewing of the Trumpet Daily. So things are beginning to break down inside the White House, the Biden White House. He currently occupies the White House. As we well know, he's just a puppet on a string. But according to NBC, big explosive report yesterday, it made its rounds on the cable shows last night. NBC revealing that Joe Biden, he might be a little bit dissatisfied with being the puppet. He can't understand why he comes out with these provocative statements. We're going to go to war. We're going to answer a chemical weapons strike with chemical weapons of our own. Well, we're going to face off with China if we have to. He can't understand why his administration then comes out, rushes out, in fact, to dial it back some. This is from NBC. It says, speculation is churning that Biden could shake up the West Wing staff. It talks about Ron Klain, the chief of staff, how that he could be exiting following the midterm elections. It says here, amid a rolling series of calamities, and you heard about it there at the top. I mean, that just focused specifically on the economy. But a rolling series of calamities. Biden's feeling lately is that he just can't catch a break. He just can't get a break. Everything he does, it just turns into a disastrous dumpster fire. We know why. There are consequences for stolen elections. This is all part of the plan, as we've said at thetrumpet.com, as we've said at the Trumpet magazine. Get your free subscription today, our 800 number, 866-930-3024. Operators are standing by. If you live in the United States, Canada, or the Caribbean, the calls are toll-free. We'll pay for the call. We've paid for the literature. You can get a free one-year subscription to a magazine that gives you tomorrow's news today. You can understand your world. You can see the world under the clear light of Bible prophecy. What a benefit that is to you as you go about your day-by-day living, preparing, hopefully, preparing for the return of Jesus Christ. Or as we've been covering in our Bible studies of late, growing in the grace and in the knowledge of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. We need to grow spiritually. We need to grow in God's character, because we see this world, it's a dangerous and perilous place, as Paul said in 2 Timothy 3. We need God's protection. We need God's guiding hand. It says here, Biden is frustrated. If it's not one thing, it's another, said a person close to the president. Beyond policy, Biden is unhappy about the pattern that has developed inside the West Wing. He makes a clear and succinct statement. Well, that's debatable. Only to have aides rush to explain that he actually meant something else. So he comes out with the so-called clear and succinct statement, and then the aides rush out and say, hang on a second, he didn't really mean this. It says here, the so-called cleanup campaign, he has told advisors, undermines him and smothers the authenticity that fueled his rise. Worse, it feeds a Republican talking point that he's not fully in command. Well, that's more than a talking point. That's obvious. It's obvious he's not fully in command. Every time he leaves a press conference, he says, I'm not supposed to answer these questions, or I'm supposed to cut it off right here. Or if he does answer one additional question, I'm going to get in trouble. He's the president of the United States, supposedly. Of course. I mean, Barack Obama said it. He said the quiet part out loud. Following the steal of 2020. If I could be down in my basement just kind of pulling the strings with a little earpiece, that'd be great, because I love the work. I really love the work of fundamentally transforming the United States of America. We're in the midst of that fundamental transformation. The Bible calls it bitter affliction. It's bitter. So bitter. God has to intervene. Only God can temporarily save the United States from this, this ongoing crisis. One after another after another. It's like Ezekiel says in chapter 9, just a chain of bloody crimes. They're just connected one to another, to another, to another. That's the way it is with these disastrous policies. And you know right where they're going. Obviously, if you open the border wide open, if you handcuff the police, if you let criminals free, if you go after the guns of law-abiding citizens. So many questions still unanswered from that school shooting last week. How come we don't know by now? Why are the police covering so much up? How come we still don't know how he got the money, the shooter, for all of those weapons and that ammunition? This is a world that's gone dark. Peter McCullough touched on that last night. He was talking about COVID, and Naomi Wolf has a new book coming out. We'll play that clip later if we have time. But here's Joe Biden. He's starting to get a little bit tired of being the puppet. being the puppet, says here at Politico, Biden sees exodus of black staffers and some frustration among those who remain. So they've brought in all of these, well, we've got to be diverse. So they've brought in all these minorities just to fill up the quota. And the minorities are wising up to the fact that, hang on a second, this isn't the challenging job I was expecting. I'm just here because of my race. And as it happens, they don't especially like the way that the Biden people are treating them. Well, that would be a scandal if it was the other party in the White House mistreating blacks. 21 blacks walking away from this administration. That's a pretty significant story, I'd say. Politico says at least 21 black staffers have left the White House since late last year, just a few months ago. Late last year, or they are planning to leave soon. Some of those who remain say it's no wonder why. They describe a work environment with little support from their superiors and fewer chances for promotion. They're being discriminated against, these minorities. So they're walking away. It says the reason for the departures may vary, but the totality of them has not gone unnoticed within the ranks, according to interviews with 9 current and former black White House officials. They're a little bit upset. They're disturbed. It says 3 black staffers who currently work at the White House and were granted anonymity because of fear of reprisal. Wow. It's a pretty strong authoritarian administration in the White House at present. So said the exodus was or has hurt morale, compounding problems that exist elsewhere. They describe an operation in which mentorship is hard to come by, and opportunity to move up the ranks of a tight-knit operation is exceptionally rare. As I say, if it was a different administration or a different political party in the White House, this would be wall-to-wall coverage, because racism, remember, Barack Obama said so, it's embedded into our DNA, and that would include the segregationist himself, or the former segregationist, Joe Biden, who now occupies the White House. Pretty troubling history in the political career of that man, the puppet, and evidently he's now tired of being the puppet. He's unhappy. This is PJ Media's take on the NBC bombshell from yesterday. It says, well, yeah, speaking of Biden's discontent, that's because he's not fully in command, and some of the things he has said could have landed us in World War III. PJ Media saying, basically, no wonder his aides had to dial it back. He's a loose cannon. Forget about the fact that he's not completely there. He's a loose cannon. Says here, but after the White House walked back the last one, according to NBC, Biden was furious that his remarks were being seen as unreliable. Further on, it says, Biden, says NBC, is mystified that his approval rating has dropped to a level approaching that of his predecessor, Donald Trump, ranked by historians as one of the worst presidents in history. That's what NBC says. And they can't believe, the media, that's why they're turning on him. They look at Biden, this was their chosen one. They anointed him king on November 7th, 4 or 5 days after the stolen election. And they told us ahead of time, there's going to be a red wave, but just wait. We're going to have to shut everything down. Well, they didn't really say that. But, I mean, they were desperate. They didn't anticipate the fact that Trump was going to be ahead, overwhelmingly so. So they shut it all down in those swing states. And then 6-8 hours later, we wake up the day after the election and find out that Joe Biden had caught up with Donald Trump, as someone tweeted out recently. What, I mean, what's more believable? The fact that there's 2,000 mules, probably a lot more, but let's just say 2,000. The fact that there's 2,000 mules stuffing ballot boxes all over the place? Or the fact that Joe Biden got 81 million votes? You decide. We'll just give you the scenarios and you decide. What's more believable? Says here, Biden, says NBC, is mystified that his approval rating has dropped. It says here, PJ Media writes, well, speaking to Joe Biden, you have Have you and those leftist historians done a comparative study of gas prices during the Trump administration and yours, of the state of the economy in general, of the level of global conflict? History is likely, if free people write it, to be much kinder to Trump than contemporary historians are, while Biden is almost certain to be judged as just as much of a disaster as he looks to be. So a lot of people in the White House, in the Biden White House, very, very unhappy with the way things are going and the way that they're being covered, anyway. You can hear his you know, propagandist as press spokesman saying, yeah, he's created all these jobs, everything's great. It's a difficult time, but still, we're being blessed. We're being blessed, they're saying. People don't believe it. People have their eyes open. They see what's happening. They see it every time they drive by the gas pump. Yesterday it was revealed that this Sussman attorney, one of Hillary Clinton's stooges there at Perkins Coie, he was acquitted. And it was a narrow, very narrow scope for this trial. You know, did he or did he not lie to the FBI? And it's not at all surprising, really. As soon as this case started, I think Sam told me there's no chance for justice in this case. Not in the swamp. Not in the D.C. court, where the judge was appointed by Obama, and he's the one that put the tight parameters on the case. And even still, as we'll cover, there have been some spectacular revelations in this. But then you look at the jury, and you have to wonder, well, what was Durham thinking? Three of them Democrat donors, one of them donating to AOC? Are you serious? I think Tucker said last night that one of the daughters of a jury member went to school with another prominent Democrat's daughter. And then you have Merrick Garland. Well, the ties between the judge's wife and Lisa Page, and then I forget who Merrick Garland performed the wedding for. It's just crazy. They're all in bed with each other. They're all Democrat operatives. One of the jury members was quoted as saying, you know, with all that's going on in our country, really, we should be considering more serious issues. Yeah, well, tell that to George Papadopoulos or Mike Flynn, whose life was persecuted by a judge who, even when the government dropped the case, the judge kept persecuting him because, well, he supported Trump. A two-tiered standard of justice, indeed, it is. Yet still, this is the Federalist. It says, notwithstanding the verdict in prosecuting Michael Sussman for lying to the FBI, the special counsel revealed several significant realities to the American public. It exposed that Hillary Clinton holds full responsibility for the Russia collusion hoax. That was a pretty significant reveal. Who knows what Durham's up to? You know, some that are hopeful that there's an equal standard of justice in the land still say that, well, maybe Durham is on to something much bigger here. Who knows? But there's a lot of indications, at least with respect to this case, that show he's been pretty weak to not even have this judge, you know, or insist that this judge recuse himself or whoever was involved on the Durham team with respect to the jury selection. They're all Hillary supporters. It's a courtroom inside the swamp, right in the heart of Washington, D.C. It says even the acquittal of Sussman will not erase the facts. So for all posterity, Clinton's fingerprints will be seen covering the worst political scandal in our country's history. Clinton, however, will not be the only one whose legacy will forever be tainted. The special counsel's prosecution of Sussman likewise decimates the reputation of the legacy media, as if there was anything left there to be decimated. But yes, indeed, all the emails that have been revealed between these high-powered media figures, these propagandists, and then Sussman, Perkins Coie, and all of them. What a swamp. This is Jonathan Turley talking about the jury and just how that really the fix was in from the beginning. Clip 6.
I mean, he is facing a jury that has three Clinton donors, an AOC donor, and a woman whose daughter is on the same sports team with Sussman's daughter. I mean, the exception of randomly selecting people out of the DNC headquarters, you could not come up with a worse jury.
You could not come up with a worse jury. You cannot make this up. This is straight out of Habakkuk 1, verses 1 through 5, where you have the righteous. And that's not to say that the Trump supporters are righteous, but just to consider what it says there in those first few verses. They're just surrounded by evil. They're in control, these radical communists. We've been saying that for many, many months now. America under attack. My father came out with that in 2013. The updated and expanded version comes out later this year, later this summer, hopefully. And you're going to want to get that as soon as it's hot off the press. At Red State, it says, but it's important to point out here that regardless of the verdict, Durham did show that the Clinton campaign was working to smear Donald Trump with false information. You had Robbie Mook admit that Hillary Clinton had okayed the smear to the media. You had a Clinton lawyer going to the FBI with that information, then charging the Clinton campaign. We knew that, but that's now an unarguable fact that the Democrats can no longer deny. It says, in some ways, this trial was always more about showing the greater point than it was just than it was about just the Sussman charge. Even if convicted of lying, he probably would have got, from this judge, he probably would have gotten just a slap on the wrist. So perhaps Red State, the Federalist, perhaps they're right that the bigger picture here is what's important. It says, to give broader commentary, this is Red State still, it's absolutely nuts that this country tries cases related to the government in a city that exists to protect itself, speaking of D.C., and number two is made up of voters who vote 92.5% of the time for one political party. D.C. is as blue can be. To even have a trial in this city is grossly unjust. It says, yet that's exactly what we do. And over, we see examples of Democrat apparatchiks being acquitted in the face of overwhelming evidence. How is anyone supposed to have trust in a system that operates that way? How can you trust a system such as this? Even as we received news yesterday that Sussman is acquitted, you've got this unbelievable revelation last night on Tucker's show with Matt Gaetz, and at least there's a whistleblower that's come out now and said, hey, there's an FBI office or there's a portal at the law firm Perkins Coie, and this is a law firm basically run by Democrat operatives. And we learned last night on Tucker's show that the FBI has an office in Perkins Coie, of all things. Listen to Tucker from last night, clip two.
We're learning tonight much more about the connection between the FBI and Sussman's former law firm, Perkins Coie. Congressman Matt Gaetz and Jim Jordan have just received a letter from Perkins Coie's attorneys. This show can report exclusively that in that letter, Perkins Coie admits the FBI has maintained a, quote, secure work environment within Perkins Coie offices for more than a decade, going back to 2012. What? According to the letter, quote, Perkins Coie is responsible to the FBI for maintaining the secure work environment. That workspace, whatever it is still in operation today. Ever heard of anything like this? No one we spoke to has.
Yeah, no one has. No one's heard of anything like this. Well, what is going to be, of course, the major media? They're not. The legacy media is going to leave this story in the dirt. They're not going to pick this up by any means. But what is the FBI? The next testimony before some kind of a Senate committee. What is Chris Wray going to say about this? Why do you have an office, a secure work environment inside Perkins Coie? These are the ones that attack Donald Trump. Why do you need an? Why does Perkins Coie need the FBI? Listen to this from Conservative Treehouse, Sundance. He says here, if I can find the quote, This is a huge development. Essentially, what is being admitted in this claim is that a portal existed into FBI databases within the law firm that represents Democrats. This means access to FBI database searches exists inside the office of the DNC and Clinton Legal Group. Think about the ramifications here. In other words, the DNC, the Clinton people, the Obama administration is using the FBI to spy on people, to unlock these politicized investigations. And they're working right with these Democrat operatives like Sussman, who should be in jail. But leave that aside. I mean, this is bitter affliction on a massive scale. This is Matt Gaetz. He's the one that came forward to reveal this on Tucker's show, clip 3.
We got a report from a whistleblower that we confirmed through multiple admissions, including this letter, showing that the Democrat Party's law firm, the law firm that received $42 million from the Democratic Party, has this co-located workspace that they operate in concert with the FBI. Why in the world would that be the case? Why would Christopher Wray allow it to continue? Then you also have to ask yourself, why within the last 12 months was the person on behalf of Perkins Coie operating that worksite, Michael Sussman himself? And we heard through this trial that you just referenced that the FBI believed Michael Sussman was lying to them in 2017 when he was shuttling false information about Trump into the intelligence process. And now we learned for 4 years after that lie, Michael Sussman was in fact operating this secure work environment. So what reason would there be for that? And what leverage would the Perkins law firm have over the FBI given this work they're doing together?
Just unbelievable. And the one positive you can say here is at least there's a whistleblower. At least there's someone left inside of the DOJ, inside of the FBI, who's willing to sound the alarm, who's willing to risk his career to alert the American public to this corruption at the highest levels. Judges, politicians, attorneys, well-educated people, all of them. But this is the swamp being swampy. One more clip from Gaetz, clip 4.
I have spoken to former federal prosecutors on the Judiciary Committee and throughout the country, and I have not heard any describe a relationship like this with a private law firm, and especially because Michael Sussman was an election lawyer. Why in the world would an election lawyer be operating this facility in this way? And our concern is that politically motivated dirt was being converted into politically motivated investigations.
Well, and obviously it was, because the whole investigation into Donald Trump, multiple investigations, they were politically motivated, and the FBI was carrying them out. They've already been exposed for this, but the fact that there's now, we now know there was an office. There still is. There has been since 2012. That takes us back to the middle of, guess who? Barack Obama's administration. That's right. He loves him some spying. Spied on the AP, spied on Cheryl Atkinson, spied on, I forget the name of the other guy from Fox. It's not even just the conservative media. Tapping phones. He was doing it all through his administration. And then if you dare blow the whistle on him, you're going to jail. He sent a lot of people to prison. He set up a vast network of American government intelligence apparatus to spy on people, to use the IRS to persecute conservative groups. He was using all of the agencies. It's not just the DOJ. This is a vile, corrupt man who's trying to destroy the United States. Pure and simple. America under attack. It's the spirit of Antiochus. He hates the foundational underpinnings of the United States of America. That's the truth. And he hates the way that the founders set up the government of the United States. And yet he uses that government today. It's largely, I mean, it's overgrown into this massive federal system that the founders never intended. But he's using he's weaponizing all of these agencies. What does it say when the Democrat Party, these are radical communists, what does it say when they politicize the country's biggest law enforcement agency? Perkins Coie and the FBI are one and the same. That's what this revelation means. And Sundance brings out at conservative Treehouse that this means effectively that Perkins Coie has access to all of these powerful spying tools of the FBI. It's right in their law firm. It's disgusting. And yet another disgusting detail that's being revealed, despite the fact that all of these communists control these agencies, they control the White House at the moment, they've got a majority in Congress, they've got judges all over the place, they've got 92.5% of the residents in Washington, D.C. voting Democrat. There's a lot of believers. It's a cult, is what it is. It's a cult. It's a religion. It's an extreme religion, a radical religion that wants nothing to do with the foundational underpinnings of the United States of America. This Peter McCullough quote, I just got to get to this before we break. Not sure if we'll have time for some of the additional content, but this is him last night. He's with Naomi Wolf at some kind of a panel discussion because she's coming out with a new book about COVID and about how that the government used that to expand its power and to take away your freedoms. And these are liberals, at least Naomi Wolf. She's a Democrat, and she can't believe it. She can't believe what the government did through these last couple of years of the COVID outbreak, all the lockdowns, the vaccine mandates, the mask mandates, and so on. So she's got a book. I'm sure it'll be riveting. But listen to Peter McCullough in the discussion with her last evening, clip 7.
Something is in the minds of people right now all over the world at the same time that is not cohesive with rational thinking. This is the biggest crisis of our times. This is going to make wars look small in the end, very small. I've checked. There's no Moderna rally on the other side of town. There's no vaccine celebration going on down the street. There's something very dark going on in the world. And it's very dark in other parts of the world where individuals have been across the board denied compassionate care. Denied compassionate care. For the first time, human beings in our generation are turning their backs on one another. That is in the minds of people, and it started at the beginning of the pandemic as we know it. Some historians believe the foundations were building all along for quite some time. Many believe it's way bigger than COVID or SARS-CoV-2. That it involves a whole series of destabilizing and disturbing events and thought patterns that are in the minds of people at the same time all over the world.
That's Peter McCullough from last night. The image on your screen there was Steve Bannon. I think Bannon is the one that promoted that discussion or maybe aired it on his program. I'm not sure. In any event, we're familiar with McCullough and some of the warnings that he sounded over the last couple of years. There he is talking. Of course, one thing that we don't necessarily agree with, he says this is the first time human beings in our generation are turning their backs on one another. In fact, that's been the story of man from the very beginning. From the Garden of Eden on, people, you see it all through the Sussman trial. You see it in the courts. You see it in D.C. You see it in the DNC. You see it in Perkins Coie. People turning their backs on family, the national family. It's everywhere. And we certainly saw it on display during the COVID scaremongering. And more is coming out, by the way, about how all of this was planned from the beginning. It's a communist attack on the United States of America in particular. I mean, it went right around the world. But the way that they were going about, even before we knew anything about it in February, March of 2020, they were already working. We've got to make sure we set aside hydroxychloroquine and all these other remedies because, hey, we've got to scare people. We've got to scare the life out of them. And then we've got to come forward with our vaccines, with our solution, not some cheap drug that's been around for decades that people all over the world have used over the counter, no problem. It was an attack from the beginning. And the number one goal on the agenda for these communists was to remove Donald Trump from office. They used it. They used it as the pretext that they desperately needed to try to make you believe that Donald Trump lost and that Joe Biden, of all people, garnered 81 million votes in November of 2020. Wow. The steal of a century. The steal of American history, really. More and more is being exposed. The AP I saw picked up on the story we covered yesterday from the Washington Post. Yeah, actually, there's a lot of problems with the machines, we now know. The True the Vote guy, he's come out and said, you know, we've got something going right now that's 10 times worse than 2,000 mules. Wow. More and more continues to be revealed as the country continues to suffer through bitter affliction. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to submit some feedback to the show, email us, td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Every particle of human suffering, unhappiness, misery, and death has come solely from the transgression of God's immutable law. Obedience to God's law liberates us from all unhappiness, pain, and suffering. It frees us from captivity, from spiritual slavery. Obeying God's commandments guarantees a life overflowing with joyful abundance. For much more on this subject, request a free copy of The Ten Commandments. When you make your request, don't forget to enroll in the Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course. This 36-lesson course is a distance learning program that will help you to get to know your Bible. Each month, you will receive a lesson that guides you in discovering the answers to life's most important questions, all from your own Bible. Your enrollment has already been paid for. Enroll today. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
We've got quite the thunderstorm going on at the moment. In case you hear any pitter patter on the metal roof that covers our beautiful studio here in Edmond, Oklahoma. Recently, I read through chapter 6 in How to Be an Overcomer. It's a booklet that we often promote in the lead up to Passover, but a great summer study as well. As we come out of college, in my case, you finish the school year, you reassess everything, you go through the personal evaluation, you come into a summer and you want to make it productive, you certainly want to make it spiritually enlivening. You want to grow, as I've been saying in these studies in recent programs, and produce and really serve God and give everything that you can to His work. Chapter 6 in this booklet, if you don't have a copy, our operators are standing by, toll-free, if you're in the U.S., Canada, or the Caribbean, 1-866-930-3024. Chapter 6 here is titled, The Science of Spiritual Warfare. There is a science to it, this process of overcoming and conquering our adversary. My father uses the example of Abraham Lincoln in this chapter. And he also spends some time talking a fair bit about Napoleon, who, as we know, he certainly was, as the fifth head of that Holy Roman Empire, a ruthless dictator, the head of Satan's system, no doubt about it. And yet, when you look at the way he approached warfare, there is a lot that we can take away from this. The Bible says that we ought to know our enemy, after all. And of course, there's many, many scriptures that talk about us being good soldiers, how that we've got to fight. This is 1 Timothy 1 and verse 18. This charge I commit unto you, son Timothy, according to the prophecies which went before you, before on you, that you by them might war a good warfare. You've got to fight the good fight. You've got to look for other soldiers. You've got to be, as a soldier, 2 Timothy 2 brings this out, you've got to be prepared to do hard things. So there's a lot that we can learn from Napoleon and the way he went about preparing for war, for conflict. It says here in the booklet, How to Be an Overcomer, Napoleon was not a great innovator in warfare. Instead, he scrupulously studied the great generals of the past and copied the habits that led to victories. It says, one truth he discovered was that there is a science to waging war. He said, all successful victorious generals followed scientific rules and principles that produced success. All of them. They followed certain rules of war that brought on success. Or if they didn't follow them, it brought on failure. Let me just take you through that passage in 2 Timothy. They're not in my notes, these verses. But this is 2 Timothy chapter 2, and it says here, verse 1, Paul, of course, is about to be executed, and Timothy was a little bit discouraged and lacking faith at the moment of this crisis. Everyone in Asia had fallen away from Paul, as it says in chapter 1. Chapter 2 says, you therefore, my son, speaking to Timothy, be strong in the grace that is in Jesus Christ, and the things that you have heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit you to faithful men who shall be able to teach others also. I mean, you've got to find some faithful men who are dedicated to growing and to teaching others and giving this truth to other people. The truth, you can look at the chapter in Ephesians 6 about the armor of God, where it says that we ought to just be dressed in truth every day. And of course, the sword of truth is our offensive weapon. I'll get to the offensive point that's brought out in chapter 6, maybe at a later program. But study through Ephesians 6. You see there that our war is not against, you know, physical, fleshly threats. It's against spirits, principalities in high places. I think I have that verse in chapter 6 in my notes. Verse 11 says, put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. I mean, he's our primary adversary, Satan the devil. He wants to destroy you. He wants to destroy me. He wants to destroy this work. He wants to destroy the family of God. And he was having quite a lot of success. Right there at the end of Paul's ministry, so many people just fell away from the truth, as I explained to you the other day. What about all those ministers? Hundreds and hundreds of them in the Worldwide Church of God, preaching strong messages to get right back on track after the dreadful 1970s period. Mr. Armstrong was away from headquarters for 300 some odd days per year. And all of these radical leftist, spiritually speaking, all of these communist infiltrators, let's just say it that way, They were taking the church right off track. And Mr. Armstrong, he came back from all those travels and he set the record straight. He did away with the STP, that slide toward Protestantism, you could call it. He did away with it and he got the church right on track. And a lot of people were put out of the church. A lot of ministers left the church, including Mr. Armstrong's own son. Some of them even attacked the Worldwide Church of God. They used the government, the corrupt government in the state of California, to try to bring down the entire church. I mean, this is something, what we're seeing in the nation of America right now, we've seen it before in the spiritual sense. We've seen it in God's church. We've seen an attack from the very top. Satan almost pulled it off in the 70s. He certainly did in the 90s. All of that's talked about in Raising the Ruins, Malachi's message. Should we know our enemy? There's a science to this warfare. We have a real adversary every day. I mean, he's bent on destroying you, getting you to take off the... If we're clothed in truth, all that he wants to do is just strip you naked of the truth of God. And of course, that's exactly what he did to the Laodiceans. Revelation 3 says they're blind and naked. They've got no protection left. They can't see where they're going. They're totally vulnerable to the attack of the devil. The attacks, multiple attacks, plural, and his demon army. Read it in Daniel 8. I mean, that's what we're going up against, an entire host of soldiers in Satan's army, a demon army. And their focus, their target, it's especially those in the Church of God. Now, they certainly want to bring down the nations of Israel as well. This passage in 2 Timothy 2, it says, "You therefore, verse 3, endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ." Are you a good soldier? Are you able to endure hardness? Can you fight through pain and trial and test? Verse 4 says, "No man that wars entangles himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who has chosen him to be a soldier." No man engaged in war, armed conflict, spiritually speaking, gets entangled into the affairs of this life. We've got a higher calling. We're not going to bog down in riotous living. Jesus went through this in Luke 21. He said, look, don't get drunk on the spirit of this age. Don't get caught up into all kinds of worldliness. Not at this time, not ever, but certainly not this time. We've got to watch and pray always. We've got to make sure that that connection to God is solid, uninterrupted, that we're in a spirit of praying always, as the Bible says, that we're quick to beseech God in prayer, in fasting, in study. God says, look, are you a good soldier? There's a lot of soldiers that have basically just surrendered. They've capitulated. In the case of ministers gone bad, a lot of them, just like I'm sure a lot of those ministers in Acts 20 that Paul encountered there at Ephesus, probably gave some rip-roaring sermons. Maybe over the course of years and years. But then toward the end, whatever it was, trusting in their own talent and ability, relying on themselves, or maybe worldly sources, as opposed to trusting in God, looking to God. None of us, no matter how smart or educated we may think we are nothing apart from God. Look at Job. Look at all of the accomplishments of Job. And God said to him, you read the last few chapters of Job. God said to him, do you really think you're a big deal? Look at you compared to me. We've said in our prayer booklet, I don't think I have that here with me, but How to Pray, fantastic booklet. But we've said in there how that the first 10 minutes or so of our prayer, it ought to be on extolling the great God of the universe, the Father of lights. The lights of the firmament, as I've stressed here the last couple of programs, the creator of the planets and the stars and the moons and the lights of the universe, the one who sustains it all with law and order. He sustains the universe. Yes, there's tohu and bohu out there. There's waste and decay, but that's because of Satan's rebellion. All of that's going to be fixed. God's family is about to beautify the universe. What a shame and a tragedy it would be to walk away from this calling, to walk away from this incredible human potential for 5 or 10 years of fun in the flesh. That's not to say that life as a Christian isn't fun. I mean, this is where the real fun is at. But I'm talking about the temporary pleasurable sensation that Hebrews 11 speaks of. A lot of people have turned and walked away from the incredible human potential just for a momentary thrill in the flesh. Think about what you're sacrificing, what you're giving up for nothing. God says, wrap your minds around this this vision, this hope-filled vision, the sufferings of this present time are not even worthy to be compared to our future. Romans 8, verse 18. There's a science to spiritual war. Napoleon studied warfare. He studied the lives of great generals. He learned that there was a science to victory in war. Victory is what we're aiming for here. Total victory, overwhelming victory. Nothing half-hearted about this exercise. We're soldiers. We're good soldiers for Christ. Of Napoleon, Andrew Roberts, in his biography, said, "In all of these and so many other battles, you can see the way in which he was able to use the extraordinarily good education he had, French education at a series of military academies, and also his own intelligence, and also his endless reading of history. It was one leadership lesson that he imposed on his captains and his generals, and that was to read history, read biography. He himself did from the age of 7 and onwards. He felt that that was absolutely always the best kind of leadership lesson that you could give anybody, to just learn from the great military leaders of history." And he said to his generals, "Now, hey, you need to study these books the way that I did, the way that I do. I've done it since I've been 7 years old." In the former prophet's book, my father says, "Napoleon Bonaparte said that if you want to be a great general, you must study the great generals of the past." That's good advice for us spiritually as well. It says Bible history is the greatest history of all because it's God's history. It's the greatest history of all. It's not like we need to go out and read all of these secular books. I mean, there's something to be said for Andrew Roberts' biography, Napoleon the Great. We went through that in book club at Ed Stone a few years ago. And certainly chapter 6 of the Overcomer booklet, an excellent chapter. My father brings together, I forget the authors, but he's obviously studied a little bit into Napoleon's life. And he's brought to our mind some spiritual lessons that we can take away from this. In just going through Lincoln's biography by Carl Sandburg, the transition there from the prairie years to the war years, and just what Lincoln was stepping into. I mean, the country was total, literally divided. The moment he stepped into office, South Carolina had seceded, other states were following suit. What a predicament he was in. What a trial for the nation. And Lincoln came in. No compromise whatsoever. He said, "Union, the union of the states, that's what we're going to fight for here. There will be no disunity. There will be no division. We're going to bring the states together." And the war that followed, the fight for unity, 600,000-700,000 casualties in the end. Nobody else. Buchanan, before Lincoln even got into office, basically said, "That's it. That's the end of the United States." And so many people in Washington and elsewhere, you think the weakness on display today is horrible. It's probably worse than it's ever been. Okay. But that's just been the tendency of man. God had to have prepared someone like Abraham Lincoln because there were so many people that already surrendered even before the fight started. We just got to find a way to, you know, make everybody happy. Try to compromise. Try to come up with some negotiated peace. Lincoln said, "No, everyone's going to have to submit to the Constitution of the United States. Everybody. And the Declaration too." What a leader. What a general. There's a lot, as my father says in that book, The Former Prophets, there's a lot that we can take away from this kind of study of history. We are at war, and it's important now, more than ever, that we be good soldiers fighting in this good warfare. It is good, because we can put down Satan's army in the end. Satan, of course, ultimately, he's going to be banished. We win in the end if we stay faithful to God. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Email us, td@thetrumpet.com. We thank you for joining us on today's show. We'll see you next time.